This is Wake Up Call.
Another kind of daytime radio program.
On the Sports Map Radio Network.
All right. Let's do this.
Alongside Ron Culver, here's Tony D.
All right, week two in the National Football League. We got two Monday night games tonight, but we got some games to talk about from Sunday. Because if you're 0-2 right now, is it a dangerous place to be? Everyone wants to make it out like you are. Remember, the Cincinnati Bengals, who are 0-2 right now, were also 0-2 last year. And yet we're in a position to make a Super Bowl run in the playoffs, beat Buffalo in Buffalo, came up short in Kansas City, and nobody really remembers or nobody even really cares that they got off to a slow start because Joe Burrow last season had an appendectomy and they kind of didn't really have a lot of, he didn't have training camp and he's off to a, didn't really play particularly well, threw a lot of interceptions and a loss to Pittsburgh, then lost the next week to Dallas. Well, he's tweaked a calf, and that's going to be a big story, but the Bengals are now 0-2, and the Chargers are also 0-2, and they are projected to be a playoff team. But it's still really, really early to start making those kind of analysis. But people do have the statistics on what it is like to go 0-2, 0-3, and I think that's where the danger part is, right? It's not so much that 0-2 keeps you out of the playoffs. It's that if you go 0-3, now we're talking about something entirely different. But I am curious to see where people are saying, look, there are going to be some issues and problems with the teams that we thought were going to be pretty decent that are off to these slow starts. But one team that is not off to a slow start are the Dallas Cowboys. And that's where we're going to start this morning, because Dallas once again dominated a New York team. They beat the Giants 40-0 and they beat the Jets 30-10. But they beat a Jets team that is no longer with Aaron Rodgers and instead with Zach Wilson. We talked about this last week. Robert Saleh had a job to do, which is to sell the public that Zach Wilson really is something they're excited about, when he knew and everyone knew that that was not true. He is like a politician. He has to say these things. He cannot tell you the truth. They never tell you the truth. So when they say we're really excited for the opportunity, why are you excited about the opportunity when on the flip side of the opportunity comes the loss of a guy you actively pursued this offseason in such a way that made you look desperate? No, they weren't excited for the opportunity because they knew who Zach Wilson was. But I will take Zach Wilson off the hook for just a little bit here. His interceptions were terrible. He rolled out. He threw to Dallas Cowboys that were standing there. They were terrible throws and terrible decisions. He takes sacks. He throws on the run. He's terrible at this. But the team didn't do him any favors. When you have Breece Hall and Dalvin Cook, why are you not running the ball consistently? It makes no sense. They pretended as if they were going to get in some massive 45-42 shootout with the Dallas Cowboys. They have one of the best defensive units in the NFL. They did not need to play a game that required Zach Wilson to throw the ball all over the place. They could have played a game in which Breece Hall and Dalvin Cook ran the ball enough that it kept the offense on the field and let the defense maybe make a play or two. Now, this is not to let Zach Wilson completely off the hook, because he's terrible at this job. And the Jets are going to have to make a decision if they want to salvage this season with the best unit they have around Zach Wilson. The quarterback is going to prevent this team from winning a lot of games. So they're going to have to find somebody that is not going to win 13 like we may have thought Aaron Rodgers could do, or 12, but just enough to get into the picture of the playoffs. And they're going to have to find who that person is. They're going to the names are everywhere. Jacoby Brissett, Joe Flacco, Carson Wentz, Matt Ryan out of retirement, whatever it may be. Whoever it is, find that person as quickly as you possibly can. Because this kid can't play for this team. Now, I'm not going to say he can't play in the NFL. Maybe there's a guru out there that can teach him a little bit more. He's only 24 years old. But right now, this kid cannot play in the National Football League. And we all knew it. And again, Sunday was one of those things where the blind leading the blind. Everyone knew you could not do this, right? That selling Zach Wilson to Jet fans and the NFL public at all was a waste of time. Everyone knew it was false. Everyone knew you weren't excited. Everyone knew there was no buzz in that building about what Zach Wilson was doing, but everyone had to toe the line because that's what you have to do. Because you can't get on a podium and say, we're screwed, we're done, we're it, that's out. Joe Douglas and Robert Saleh are managing and coaching for their jobs. You have to go find another quarterback. And Nathaniel Hackett, you've got to take the game plan and throw it in the trash. I still use that line from Matthew McConaughey and We Are Marshall. Power eye in the trash. Because he realized he didn't have the personnel to run it with an all-freshman team at Marshall. Same thing here. That game plan you had with Aaron Rodgers as your quarterback, in the trash. Zach Wilson is your quarterback until you find somebody else, and you better find another offensive scheme. The team is good enough to win enough games to be in the running. They're not going to win the division, but they're good enough defensively, and they're good enough. Garrett Wilson, Brees Hall, and Dalvin Cook are enough to get you a few wins if you've got a quarterback that's smart with the football. He doesn't have to be Aaron Rodgers. You don't need him to be slinging it all over the place. You can win games running the ball and playing defense, and that would be enough to be in the running for something. Maybe you don't get in, but it's at least a step in the right direction until next season when you might have a healthy Aaron Rodgers, and then you could go pursue the championship. But this season, with the talent that you have around the quarterback, is going to be wasted if you don't change the quarterback. So hopefully they know what they were saying was not true and will go to work in getting somebody that can do the job. But on the flip side of it, let's talk about Dallas. I've gone down this road before with the Cowboys many times, where at the beginning of the season, they look great. They do something magnificent. Dak Prescott looks sharp, and the running game looks good, or the defense looks good. Take your pick. There's 100 of them. But it's never around this time that we should be talking about the Cowboys. It is always around week 10 or 11. It's always around when some other team is emerging as really good in the NFC, and they play Dallas, let's say, in week 13. Those are the moments that if I'm a Cowboy fan, I'm waiting for. How are we going to do against the Eagles? How are we going to do against some team that will pop up in the NFC that's catching a little bit of buzz? And more importantly, how are we going to do in the playoffs, especially against San Francisco, the team they've lost to in back-to-back years? But right now, they've got everything clicking. And Micah Parsons is as good as you're going to get on defense from anybody.
He's a defensive MVP.
He is so far. Absolutely the defensive MVP.
Lightning quick.
My wife and I were on the couch just watching. She wasn't watching football. I was. And I just blurted out, that kid's going to be the MVP. And my wife goes, who? And I go, oh, never mind. You don't even care.
Yeah.
I just blurted out, that kid was so disruptive. He is he goes after the football, and he's always around. No matter where he is coming from, he is always, always getting to the quarterback.
Yeah.
They had nobody that could block him. They couldn't double team him. They couldn't do anything. He was constantly disrupting the Jets.
And he makes it look easy.
No, totally.
It makes it look like it's, you know, literally, you know, a professional going against high schoolers. That's how quick he just, I mean, it's like he's running a camp.
Fantastic. Fantastic. Like now, I said, I mean, I've gone down this road with the Cowboys. We'll see. But right now, sharp as a tack. Now, they're playing two teams where you could, you know, the Giants looked abysmal and the Jets don't have Rodgers, but I don't care.
No, they got.
I don't care.
This is their cupcake games. They're tuning up, which is perfect for them. But my son, even my oldest, was watching the game with me, and he goes, oh, do you think this team's good enough to be to be a Super Bowl team? And I was like, it's the Cowboys. He goes, oh, that's right. They'll lose in the playoffs.
Yeah, we'll see.
And
yeah,
if they can get rid of that stigma, that's going to be the tough one.
Bunch of years we've done this. Early on, one of the top teams, one of the better teams in the league, everything. It's when the wear and tear starts. It's when bumps and bruises occur, twists and ankles and all that things, and then we'll see what happens. Speaking of injuries, Joe Burrow, calf injury again last night. They went 0-2. Started 0-2 last year, as I mentioned. But boy, if they have a calf injury issue with their quarterback, oh boy, look out. Now you've already lost a game at hand in the division. as the Ravens are now 2-0.
Yeah, I'm starting to think Ja'Marr Chase was right all along when he said, hey, don't come back until week four.
Exactly. Exactly. What is it? I know you're paying a guy a lot of money, but what is the point?
Yeah.
What? Make sure that injury was healed.
You're not in
ready
it for
to
these,
go.
For the first month of the season. You're in it for the playoffs.
That's right.
And there's plenty of time. You sit down for the first four. Maybe you squeak. Maybe you go 1-3. Even if you went 0-4, you know, I think that team's good enough even after an 0-4 start to make the playoffs.
Yeah, they probably won't win the division at 0-4,
no.
But they will make the playoffs. But, yeah, I mean,
I don't think they're going to win the division now.
Just make sure it's healed properly, because you don't want to see Joe Burrow with some massage gun thing sitting on the bench putting it on his calf. That's not an image you want to go around social media.
And you don't want it to be tightening up like late in the season when week 8, week 9, week 10 comes along, and all of a sudden it's like, okay, well, now we got to sit him.
Exactly.
All right, now it's crucial.
We've got a lot of games to get to around the National Football League. We'll talk about college, including the Rocky Mountain Showdown, which most of America stayed up for Saturday night to watch. A
lot of bandwagoners.
Oh, my goodness. Everybody's jumping on the train now. It felt like everybody was up. That was the weird part about that game. That was a
right.
very, very late start on Saturday, and it felt like everybody in America was up at 1:30, whatever it was.
And
I forgot what time I went to bed.
Yeah,
and
no one cared that it went to overtime.
No.
It was like,
overtime.
Oh, my
yeah,
God, it's going amazing. On again. It's like no one cared.
Well, we'll talk about that. And I do have a message for ESPN and Mark Jones that I do want to get out to, because it's getting to a point now where it's getting ridiculous. We'll talk about that coming up. And also, again, more from Week 2 in the NFL. Two games tonight, New Orleans at Carolina. It'll be Derek Carr and the Saints taking on Bryce Young and the Panthers, and the Steelers hosting the Cleveland Browns at Acushnet Stadium. That's your Monday night doubleheader tonight. We'll continue. It's Wake Up Call on Sports Map Radio.
Listening to Wake Up Call on the SportsNet Radio Network. Alongside Ron Culver, here's Tony D.
All right. Now, normally we go through a lot of the NFL on Monday, and then we kind of touch on college games but I got to get to the Rocky Mountain Showdown on Saturday night, because it felt like everybody was there and everybody watched it. And
yep.
I mean, really. So I moved to Colorado in 2002, and the first thing I really covered was the first Rocky Mountain Showdown. My first Rocky Mountain Showdown was in 2002. And so I've been to a ton of them. And not one time has anyone around America cared about this matchup. I mean, they had it at the Invesco Field, now in Power Field at Mile High. I mean, they used to play it in the Broncos Stadium, and no one cared. No one around the country cared. And it was only until Dion showed up and bringing every celebrity friend he had with him that all of a sudden America was starting to watch college football based on the Buffaloes. And I'll tell you right now, and this is the Dion effect, and I'm not saying anything that's you know, insightful. This is pretty obvious. Let's say the Buffaloes had hired Mike Jones, just a random name of a guy that's up and coming, and he had that team at 2-0, and he had that team ranked in the top 25, and he had a team that beat TCU in Fort Worth and then Nebraska. Again, nobody would have cared about the Rocky Mountain Showdown. Nobody would have been tuning in on Saturday night, and America wouldn't have stayed up for a lot of people east of the Mississippi well past midnight for a double overtime game, because it would still have only been an 18th ranked team against an unranked team that lost to Washington State. It is because Deion Sanders is on that sideline and because he is getting the attention of America with things he may or may not even believe. Deion Sanders is so good at selling you anything that is one of the reasons why America was tuned into that game. Because what he was able to do, and this is brilliant. I'm sorry, this is brilliant. You may disagree with it, you may not like it, but it's brilliant. He takes Jay Norvell's sunglasses and hats comment, and what does he do with it? He has part of his portfolio is that he has an endorsement deal with a sunglass company. He gets his entire team sunglasses. He then has everybody wear sunglasses. And then he makes it so much bigger than it actually was. And then America wants to know how the game will turn out. Will he actually slaughter Colorado State? Or will Colorado State be in a dogfight with Colorado? And for most people, what they were watching in the fourth quarter was either going to be two things: Colorado coming back in that game, which they did, or Colorado State feeding humble pie to Deion Sanders. And Deion Sanders knows he wins either way. That's what made it so great. Is Deion is like, I don't care if you hate me or love me, but you're going to pay attention to me. Because he knows. And deep down, this is one of the reasons he created the prime time persona in the first place, is that apathy is what you try to avoid in anything. Get people to notice you. Get people to want to know what you're doing. Get people eyeballs on the product. Shador Sanders is the beneficiary of everything his father is doing. America watched Shador Sanders rally his team back without Travis Hunter in that football game. Shador Sanders was getting LeBron James tweeting about how much he is a problem in a good way. NFL people are now going, this kid is a first-round talent. Why? Because his father is drawing eyeballs to that school. In all honesty, let's pull the curtain back for this for a second, okay? This Colorado football team is nowhere near championship good. Nowhere near it. Their defense is porous. They get off to slow starts. They're nowhere near a level of national championship good. It's irrelevant. It's irrelevant. What matters is if Deion can find something that gets that team in the news and gets them attention, and he shows up with every single celebrity that he possibly can, it is going to draw so many eyeballs to the talent that is his son and Travis Hunter when he comes back, because now he's going to be out for a few weeks, and everybody else on that Buffalo's team. Right, they're likely going to lose to Oregon. They're likely going to lose to USC. Now, if they don't, boy, I'm telling you right now, you think the attention is up to 100 right now? Wait till they beat Oregon if they do. Wait till they beat USC if they do. And they don't even have to win both of the games. If they just pull off an upset on one of those two games, it's going to be up to 11 times 1,000. But that's who's benefiting from Colorado is his son's magnificent. His son throws a gorgeous football. He's a leader. I mean, everything. But the problem is this. It's TCU was a shootout. TCU was a shootout. Props to the Buffaloes for being in a shootout, but it was a shootout. Nebraska, that game took forever for that offense to get clicking. And if it wasn't for constant mistakes by Jeff Sims, Nebraska could have won that game. And Colorado State absolutely should have won that game. That is, by the way, that is a dirty football team. Holy cow. Colorado State. Holy cow. But nevertheless, they should have won that football game. I mean, at what point, if you were watching it Saturday night, when that punter came out and knocked it to the 2-yard line, I went, everything is going right for them.
Yep.
Everything. They just pinned Colorado back late in the fourth quarter at the 2-yard line. And the Buffaloes needed 8 points. They have every opportunity. They were getting to Shador Sanders all night. They were disrupting the passing game. Everything was going well. So what do? Prevent defense. Prevent defense.
All the way down the field.
They do it all. Everybody does this, and it never works. But what the problem is that as Colorado is getting down the field on easy throws because the prevent defense allows you to do a bunch of accumulate yards without accumulating the big yards, is that you put Colorado in a position where their playmakers could make big plays. And that's what they did on the 45-yard touchdown that led to the chance to tie the game. And I hated this. Colorado State's receivers. So all night long, their quarterback is throwing these short slant routes their receivers are catching them, and they're going sideline to sideline, right? On the last drive that could have put them in field goal range. So Colorado State ended up punting that didn't really result in anything. On third down, the receiver had it, and you could see space to the first down marker. But instead, he was trying to get to the corner, and he didn't get to the corner. He couldn't get the first down. Couldn't keep that drive alive. So Colorado State rallies. We get into overtime. Colorado State scores. I mean, Colorado scores. Colorado State scores. Colorado scores again. Colorado State comes up short. Did Jay Norvell win the game? No. Did Deion Sanders and the Buffaloes show them, destroy them, eat alive? No. And by the way, I was dead wrong about Colorado State. Dead wrong about them. That was a bad football team. Three wins in the last 2 years. Haven't beaten Colorado in the Rocky Mountain Showdown in a while. That was a really tough football team. That was a very good team. By the way, Lewis Riddick had almost everybody on the Rams playing in the NFL on Sunday throughout the broadcast. Did you notice that? Almost everybody that was playing, it was like, that guy's going to play Sunday. That guy's going to play on Sundays. That guy's going to play on. So don't forget, when we get to the draft, if Colorado State's name is mentioned over and over again, Lewis Riddick predicted that for you.
They're going to set the record.
Yeah, Lewis Riddick was the one that kind of made them out to be the new Alabama on Saturday night. Every single player that made a play is capable of playing on Sundays.
I felt he was very in love with the tight end.
Yeah, very much so.
What was his name?
No, not going to remember him down the road. He made a great catch. He made a great catch and touchdown.
Hey, you get a pass-catching tight end like that. I was like, aren't they all supposed to be that way?
All the defensive players. The one that got ejected from the game is going to be a big NFL star.
Yep.
And they probably will. Lewis Riddick knows what he's talking about. So, I mean, who am I to argue with him? But go back. Listen, the hype machine is real. I mean, there's no question about it. It's real. Deion Sanders is drawing. I mean, 60 Minutes was there. I didn't see the piece last night on 60 Minutes. But I know 60 Minutes was doing a feature on him. Mark Johnson is the radio play-by-play guy of the Buffaloes. He's been there for 20 years. He now is appearing on NPR shows. Every media outlet is wanting a piece of this Buffalo phenomenon with Deion Sanders attached to it. NPR is doing a sports segment on the Deion effect. Yeah. Yeah, Mark Johnson was participating in an interview session with NPR on the effect of Deion Sanders. All right, we'll continue on the NFL as we can roll along this morning on Twitter at Tony D Radio, at Ron Culver. That's Ron with two S.
This is Wake Up Call on the SportsMap Radio Network. Alongside Ron Culver, here's Tony D.
All right, one more thought on the Rocky Mountain Showdown. I thought the broadcasting team, though, Mark Jones and Lewis Riddick. Okay, listen, I get it. I'm never going to convince people what the proper thing to do is as a national voice of a game, like the way you try to keep it, neutral, but. I mean, for the love of Pete, the absolute blatant appeasement of Deion Sanders was so evident in that broadcast. I mean, you could pour it on pancakes. It was ridiculous.
We weren't watching a Colorado television crew?
I'm going to go on a ramp. All right, here I go. Okay, listen. Many of us in this business, okay, when we get into this business, doesn't matter what you do, you go to journalism school and you get told, and most of it is for news journalism, right? You get told you got to be unbiased. You got to do other stuff. So do these principles. But then they get lost when you get into the real world, right? You work for different angles. You work for a paper that may want you to go on more Republican side or more Democrat side. You work in sports. You follow a team, so you get more bias for the team. Sometimes you actually work for the team, so you actually are more of a homer. There's all sorts of ways that sort of journalistic ideal just gets funneled out. But when you're doing it for a living and you hang around, even if you want to admit that it doesn't matter, you do like it when the people you cover like you, right? I'll tell you, when it happened to me, the first time it was starting to happen to me, it was really cool. I was young. I was constantly in the Rockies locker room all the time. And then, you know, when somebody like Todd Helton is coming up, patting you on the back, going, "Hey, man, what's going on? How you doing? Everything good?" All of a sudden, like, I'm young. It's like neat. You know, it's like a neat feeling. And when somebody in a press conference mentions you by name, you get a little bit, even if you want to admit that you're not affected by that because you want to be professional, it is cool. You know, you ask a question and they go, "Oh, Joe, how you doing, Joe? Yeah, go ahead." You know, they see you all the time. They know you all the time. That's an addicting feeling. And here's the problem with how the national media is covering Deion. Deion makes you feel really important all the time. That's the one trait that he has that everybody says. He makes you feel really important. So when you are covering him and you're doing the thing where you're showing up to practice on a Thursday and you're sitting down with him in the meetings and you're talking to him about players and he's asking you about your family and you're talking to, and he's patting you on the back and he's putting his arm around you and he gives you free sunglasses and all of those things, you love him. You watched him as a kid. There's no broadcaster in the country that hasn't watched Deion Sanders their whole life, right? I mean, anybody that is over 30 had Deion Sanders in their life the entire existence of their life. Whether he was a player, broadcaster, now coach, Deion Sanders has been an incredible figure for everybody. So you are enamored by it, right? It's prime time. He's one of the global stars. And he likes you? This is the guy that's friends with everybody. The Rock is wearing a jersey. Snoop Dogg is wearing a jersey. They're all wearing custom jerseys, right? And he likes you, and he's asking you about your wife and your kids and how things are going. And he's maybe even commenting on a thing you did, a play, you know, something. You just become enamored with it. And so in the broadcast, what do when that happens? Coach Prime. Look at Prime Time. Look at him dialing that like his dad. Like that was Mark Jones. So at the end of the game, the Buffaloes, who were favored by 25 points, I think it got down to 23, but they were favored by as much as 25 points leading into this game. They win a double overtime game in which for most of the game, they were confused and didn't know how to play without Travis Hunter. And even when Travis Hunter was on the field, Colorado State still controlled the game. A game, again, which Colorado was favored by over 3 touchdowns. They needed double overtime and a 98-yard drive at the end to tie the game. Mark Jones, what does he do as soon as the game is over? What is he screaming in the microphone? "Do you believe now?" The most inappropriate phrase for the moment I have heard in a national broadcast in a long time. That had no place in that game. If Colorado had won 56-3, fine. If they had won 48-7, fine. But in a game where they didn't look good at all and they dropped in the polls and they don't look like they're going to be competitive with Oregon or USC, you only scream that because you really want to be liked by Deion Sanders, because he's going to be around a long time and you want to be part of the club. That's the only way you do that. I mean, that was silly. I was embarrassed for him for saying that. And then posing on the field, him and Lewis Riddick posing on the field before the game in the sunglasses that Deion Sanders gave them. Now, again, I get it. The journalism is out, neutral, bias, games out, because nothing annoys me more than when a fan base is like, "I hate Joe Buck. He hates my team." Chris Collinsworth, I turn off the sound. He hates my team. I hate that. It's silly. It's immature. It's dumb. But the overblatant love affair is more than just respect. It's more than just respect. It is wanting to be part of something that Dion is creating in Colorado, which is, man, I want you to be with me on this. I want you to be part of what we're doing. Everyone's in on it. Everyone is jumping in. Somebody made a point. I think it was Pete Futek at College Football News. He got people who have nothing to do with the Colorado program. Nothing. Never went there. Never played there. Barely have been to Boulder in their life. What were the celebrities saying when they were being interviewed? They were calling Colorado we. They were saying The Rock played at Miami. And he's saying we. Because Dion is good at this, man. He's good at this. And he's also a really good coach. He's also got a really talented son at quarterback. And I don't know how long Travis Hunter is going to be out. That was a brutal hit. That was pretty brutal. But he did stay in the game. He didn't leave after that hit. He continued to play both sides of the ball into the second quarter, and then eventually was taken to the hospital. But he's really good at this. And he's going to be around a long time. And I think people want, like, they know he keeps receipts, and I think everybody wants to be part of this train that's moving along in college football. But it was very, very blatant which side they were rooting for. Because can we be honest here? What is Colorado State? Like, how, if Colorado State had pulled off that game, does the party end for a period of time? Even if Colorado State looked good, does the Deion Sanders party come to an end? No, but it doesn't have the same fanfare and luster it does. Fox Sports immediately put out a 3-0 graphic and the thing that said we coming. Like, who is not on this Colorado Buffalo hype train? Who has he not hired to be on this train?
You know, I don't think it's hiring anymore either.
I think they want to do this.
Yeah, no, I found a photo on Twitter or a graphic on Twitter, and I sent it to my brother because my brother was texting me late Saturday morning, or I guess what, early Sunday morning, I should say, late Saturday night, because he's up watching the game, and it's just all it was, you know, it's a Colorado Buffalo's bandwagon emblem.
Yeah.
It's like, you know, join, and he's like, that's all me. He's never watched college football. He's never understood it. He goes, I'm starting to get he's like, I understand the appeal of college football. I'm starting to get it. And I'm like, it's a different beast.
Okay, but why is he a fan of it?
Well, he's a fan of it because of Deion Sanders.
Why? Did you ask him why?
I think.
Okay, because what is it? It's not just fun. There's been plenty of teams that are fun. What is it about him?
I think it's the I want to say it's the showmanship and backing it up.
Okay, but go back to what I was saying before. Is anybody really paying attention? What have they done in three games? Right? They beat TCU in a back and forth shootout. They beat a Nebraska team that turned the ball over a million times, and they barely beat Colorado State. This isn't what USC is doing. Right? This isn't what Caleb Williams is doing. And Shador Sanders is great, but they're not number one. They're not number two. They're not number five. They're 19. They're 19. It is more than the football is fun. It is everything to do with the personality. The football's good. The football's good. It's fine. But it's not where Michigan is. And I think it has everything to do with, I've known this guy forever. I couldn't name you five coaches in college football if I tried, but I know him. All right, welcome back. It's Wake Up Call, Sports Map Radio. All right, so let's jump up. We'll get off the college train for a bit. I was just still buzzing about it all day. I posted that yesterday, that I was just still buzzing about the Rocky Mountain Showdown, even as watching NFL yesterday. But again, two Monday Night Football games tonight. Derek Carr and the Saints are in Carolina or in Charlotte to take on the Carolina Panthers. And then the Steelers will take on the Browns in an AFC North matchup. And the Browns, if they win, will tie with Baltimore for 2-0 in the division, with the Bengals at 0-2 and the Steelers also at 0-2. Now, again, I don't think there's any need to worry if your team starts off slow. Plenty of games. The one thing you will start noticing, as I was mentioning at the top of the hour, is you will start noticing that there will be people pointing out, hey, if you go 0-3, then we've got a problem. If you go 0-4, look out. Like you're in a real mess when it comes to making the playoffs. But there are going to be some teams that when they really find their groove, they're going to start winning some games and get back into this thing last night. I thought the Patriots Miami game was better than it should have been toward at the end of that game. But Miami, really fun team to watch. I mean, I got to say, I think the Dolphins are one of the more fun teams to watch in the AFC. Patriots, I thought we're going to come back in this one. When Stevenson scored that touchdown with about 5 minutes left, I thought that they were going to kind of rally and get back into this. But no rally compared to what the Giants did in Arizona. Did the Arizona Cardinals forget that they're on this tanking for Caleb Williams thing? Because somebody must have got to them at halftime. They were crushing the Giants in that game yesterday. And the Giants came back and won 31-28, in which they scored 31 points in the second half. Do you know the Giants were looking as the worst team in the NFL through six quarters of play? They were shut out in that game against Arizona at halftime. That means they had not scored a point in six quarters, and then they escaped with 31 of them. 31 of them in the second half. Daniel Jones, Saquon Barkley putting up some scores. Jones finishing with 321 yards. Oh, and Arizona went, oh, yeah, sorry, plan B was always to wonder how we're going to get Caleb Williams in the draft. Three touchdowns for the Giants at about halfway through the third quarter. Then they get a field goal at the end with 19 seconds remaining to get a 31-28 victory. That was Josh Dobbs. I'm telling you, the kid is going to have a career in the NFL. Very similar to I don't want to say Ryan Fitzpatrick. That's kind of that's almost like the extreme of guys who bounce around the league and find themselves playing for teams, because Ryan Fitzpatrick played for everybody. So it's almost like a weird, but he's going to have a successful career bouncing around team to team. He's never going to be the team's starting quarterback. He's never going to be the team's number one option, but he's going to make a pretty good living. He's going to have one of those reputations. We talk about it in Hollywood a lot, where there are actors that are just well-respected enough by all the directors that they're like, man, we got this role, and we know that so-and-so is perfect for it. He comes in, he knows his lines, he's never a hassle, he doesn't cause any problems, he never asks for more money, never shuts down production. When we ask him to be there at 7, he shows up at 7. When we tell him we're done, and he's great. Everyone loves working with him. All the other actors love him. He's great. That's going to be Josh Dobbs. Josh Dobbs is that kind of quarterback. He's going to bounce around the league. People are going to get to know him. They're going to like him. He's got a great personality. He's super smart. Like I said, rocket science major at Tennessee. And he's going to leave Arizona, and he'll go somewhere else, and somebody will go, you know what? That kid's awesome. He knows the playbook. He's really smart. He gets it immediately. He works hard. He's always first one in the building. Never causes a problem. Let's bring him in. We got a backup role. He can be a backup. And that's the job he's going to have. Maybe he's with Arizona for a bit, who knows, whatever, but he's very likely to just sort of bounce around this league. The game I was probably more disappointed with was Kansas City and Jacksonville. I thought that was going to be a fun Patrick Mahomes, Trevor Lawrence shootout. What? Somebody sold me on this epic quarterback battle between these two guys.
I'm 100% with you. I don't know, man. I guess they kept saying that the humidity was really thick there.
Yeah, maybe so.
That did something, but I mean, it was anything but fun.
I thought it was going to be like 34-31.
Yeah.
But maybe you're right. Maybe the heat was just bogging everybody down. Trevor Lawrence completed like 50% of his passes. Right? That was about it for 200 yards. Travis Kelce returned. He had a touchdown, but he only had four catches. Mahomes threw for over 300 yards and two TDs, but I thought this would be epic.
But it didn't look electric. I think that's the problem.
That's the thing.
I mean, he threw for 300 yards, but Trevor Lawrence had 250-plus.
Yeah.
And it just felt like, I don't know. It just didn't feel like there was any sizzle to this game. A
couple of turnovers.
Mm-hmm.
That was about it. I mean, we were talking about it being one of the best games of the weekend, in terms of previewing it.
Yeah, we thought it was one of the best games of the weekend. We thought, hey, this probably should be the Sunday nighter.
It was a rematch of last year's divisional round game. Yeah. The Sunday nighter, though, as I was mentioning earlier, it wasn't bad. I thought it was going to go completely one-sided until the Patriots scored twice in the fourth quarter.
I'm 100% on the fact that The officials should have counted that first down.
Yeah, I'm with you there.
Because fat man like that never gets any
Yeah, gotta get some love.
That's
man.
The only reason why. I know it didn't cross the line when you looked at it. You know, you saw the replay over and
but
over
give
again.
It to
it's
him.
Like he's like, yeah, he's down. But you know what? Give it to him because I want to see him get, you know, get his due.
Yeah, that's
everyone
true.
Everyone loved him. He became an overnight hero. But that was, hey, I'll give it this too. That was a good heads up play.
Yeah,
he saw that he wasn't going to go. So many times we see guys just keep fighting and fighting and fighting for him to just say, "Oh, I'm just going to toss it back real quick." I thought it was a great idea.
Atlanta's off to a 2-0 start. They beat the Green Bay Packers yesterday.
And, and your boy is definitely rookie of the year.
He's amazing.
he's rookie of the year.
No, Bijan Robinson's great.
Give it to him now.
He had 4 catches out of the backfield. He had 19 carries. He had close to like 170 yards on the ground or something, like 160 yards on the ground or something. Combined. All-purpose yards. He had 120 on the ground and like 50 through the, you know, catching out of the backfield. Yeah, him and Tyler Algier, that's a wonderful combination for the Falcons. And that's great for a quarterback like Desmond Ridder. This is what I was talking about with Zach Wilson. Like, you got Bijan Robinson, you got Dalvin Cook and Breece Hall. Why are you making Zach Wilson's life more difficult by making him throw the ball down the field all the time when you could play a defensive run attack and let your quarterback grow into the game?
What I don't get was, in that game, both of those guys can't catch out of the backfield.
Right.
And why are we just, you know, like little dumpy passes to get 2 or 3 yards here or there?
Yeah.
I mean, you're not going to be able to run against that line. You know, and I don't care. You're going to try to send him right up the middle. That's just, you know, that's a 2 yard loss every time. I mean, the Cowboys are just that good. Micah Parsons is out of this world right now.
But run on the other side.
But
if
you just throw it out to the team, yeah, throw it out to the flats
and whatnot.
Yeah, throw it out to the flat and just, you know, or just, you know, have them be like, you know, have one of them block real quick and then roll out. I mean, it just seems, that seems like the logical thing to do against the Cowboys defense that, you know, is, I mean, it's just, they are so good.
Yeah. That defense is priding themselves on being one of the best defensive units in the NFL, and it really has to do with Dan Quinn. He really has got that dialed in. Last year it was fantastic. It just, you know, there was, again, you run into the 49ers in the playoffs, but it's gotten better. It's statistically, over the first 2 weeks, the best defense in the NFL. I mean, we got a long way to go, but it's not so much statistically, it's what they have on that field, how they get to the ball. And again, Micah Parsons is right now the early favorite to win defensive player. He was the favorite beginning of the season to win the NFL defensive player of the year.
His odds just keep getting better each week.
Yeah, it just gets better all the time. It's better all the time.
Now, I'm with you, like what you said earlier, too. It's like, you know, kind of got to see what will happen when he plays against a good team.
Yeah, that's been the MO on the Cowboys with Mike McCarthy over the past couple of years, is that this is a double-digit win team. Right, 11 wins, 12 wins, whatever. But they have back-to-back 12-win seasons. But towards the end, you felt like they were a little vulnerable. They didn't feel as good as Philadelphia. They didn't feel as good as San Francisco. And they showed it, right? They lost to the 49ers in back-to-back playoff appearances. But even if they had gotten by the 49ers, they weren't Eagles good. There was a feeling like there was something that they just didn't have. We'll see down the road what happens to this team if indeed something happens. But with Cowboy fans, there has been another shoe drop because they have had these starts a number of times and have not gone to the Super Bowl. I mean, I feel like there is a consistent early season buzz on what the Cowboys are doing. And then it kind of goes away. Now, I will have to say there's one team that I didn't put in the playoffs that I said, hey, there might be a problem last week that did not show any of that this weekend, and that was Buffalo.
Yeah.
Josh Allen looked sharp. The team looked really good. The Raiders scored early and then were shut down after that.
I will say that. I mean, they started off shaky.
Yeah, they did.
They didn't look that great early on at the beginning part of that game, but then all of a sudden you saw them turn it on. It was like, okay. They remembered who they were.
Allen was 31 of 37 in that game for 274 and 3 touchdowns. Yeah, that's like Phil Simms in the Super Bowl good.
Is that good? I don't know.
Yeah. That's
what Buffalo needs to be going to the Raider fan today. Is that good?
Yeah, he's
31 out of 37.
He's spreading it all around. I mean, he had like 12 different receivers in that game, man. James Cook had over 100 yards rushing. That team did look like it came together this week and said, all right, look, how in the world we lost this game in New York to the Jets when they were reeling without Rodgers? We'll never know. But let's put it aside and let's go beat Las Vegas and go take them down. And they did. And they won handedly. The Broncos, they lost the game. They were leading early and leading big. They coughed it away. But Russell Wilson threw a bomb from 50 yards out. They got into the end zone, and then they failed on the two-point conversion.
And how they got the Hail Mary to work. I mean, it was so short.
Yeah. Hail Marys are interesting. Everybody wants you to think. Here's the thing with Hail Marys. You hear it from players, and I think one of the Broncos players said the same thing. You hear this from players where they go, hey, listen. Every fan thinks we're all just running down the field like we're playing backyard football. We're not. We're going to designated areas. We're supposed to go to areas where, okay, if the ball is being tipped up in the air, I'm here, and then someone's behind me too, right? So they're all supposed to be, it's like a designed play. But it never looks like right? You can sell that all you want, but it never looks like that. It looks like complete and utter chaos. But in that situation, you kind of go, well, maybe they're right, because the ball was like tipped into the hands of the guy in the back of the pack, and he's in the end zone.
Brandon Johnson. He honestly looked like he was in the right place at the right
absolutely,
time.
Absolutely. And then they couldn't convert the 2-point conversion, and that wasn't that surprising, and they lost. As the Washington Commanders came back and won that game. More in the NFL than the good, the bad, and the dub for your Monday as we get ready for hour two.